Cast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio for Dr. Richard Schertz. I'm Jim Russ. We will have profiles in IT. We'll get to the mailbag. We'll also give you a chance to play the pop quiz.
And now, it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
We brought him back for a new year.
Yes, indeed.
I figured he was a goner.
I did, too, you know, because he was kind of messing up there right at the end of the year.
Like he didn't care anymore. So I don't know.
I hope they didn't give him much of an increase over the...
I think they had a talking with him.
I think they did. Got an email from Margaret. Dear Dr. Schertz, I own a Logitech Squeeze Box Internet Radio, and when it works, I really like it. But it is having issues. There are times when it simply loses connection or signal. I don't know how to troubleshoot this. Is it the radio or is it my megabits per second upload-download speed through my Verizon Fios service? I did several speed tests a few days back, and my speed was really low. 4 megabits per second download and 1.73 megabits per second upload. Do I have an effective radio or do I need to hand over more dollars to Verizon to get a speed upgrade? How do I know if that will actually improve my radio performance? I only use the internet. I don't use Verizon for TV or for phone, just for internet. Thanks, Margaret, a regular listener in Bethesda. Well, Margaret, I'm glad to report that you have enough bandwidth for simply listening to audio. That doesn't take much bandwidth, actually, and you're only using download bandwidth when you're listening to the radio, and 4 megabits per second is plenty of speed for audio. So I don't think that is really an issue. Now, what may be an issue is that you see Verizon Fios does not guarantee bandwidth. So there could be times and moments when all of your neighbors are on the internet streaming YouTube videos, and your effective bandwidth could go down depending on how many people are sharing the network, and so it kind of goes up and down depending on the load. And I've noticed that. And like if you test it in the middle of the night, it's always much higher than it is on Saturday afternoon, for instance, when everybody's playing games or downloading YouTube videos.
I've never heard of this device before. I was just downloading it on the web to see what it looks like. It looks pretty cool.
The Logitech Squeeze Box Internet Radio is very nice. It's a Wi-Fi device. And what it does, you can basically go and pick up internet audio streams using this device, and then it has a great amplifier and speaker system, and you basically have a radio that's streaming songs from or streaming internet radio stations through the internet, and it has been very effective. It has great reviews, very good reviews.
It looks pretty cool.
Now, people have...
And they're not expensive.
They're not very expensive, no. And what people have said, they really like the sound. They like the way it sets up the connection. Many people don't like the... Like, you can use it as a clock radio, but they said it's so hard to adjust it using the touch screen or using the buttons that people really didn't like the controls. But just as a straight radio, it's gotten great reviews. Hmm. Now, I think your problem is actually with the Fios speed varying through over time. What happens, I also have Fios, and sometimes my Fios internet will just stop coming through, and I've got to go out to my router and reboot it. And when I reboot it and it comes back up, I get my internet back again. So occasionally, my router loses the connection with the main network node, and then I reboot it, and it resets itself, and I get it. You could log on to it, and you could ask for a new IP address, and you could do that. And that happens occasionally, and it really shouldn't happen, but it does. So whenever I have trouble having internet access, I just unplug my router and plug it back in again, which I think you could do that. There's a power connection on the back of that router. Just unplug it, plug it back in again, and it will take it probably a couple of minutes to reboot, to resync, and your radio will get back on again. And then I would start paying attention as to whether at what times it's dropping off. But I suspect it's just variability of your Verizon Fios service. And unless you're willing to pay for guaranteed bandwidth, which I have to tell you is very expensive, you're not going to fix this problem. And I don't think getting more bandwidth from Verizon is going to help you, because that will simply increase the upper limit that they'll let you get. They won't throttle you down if you pay for more bandwidth, but actually the lower limit is unchanged. So when everybody's, when there's no bandwidth to go around, it's still going to choke out.
Well, it doesn't matter if everybody else is using that in the neighborhood. It doesn't matter how much you have available, right?
It doesn't matter how much. It doesn't matter how much capacity they let your router go. So when you buy more bandwidth from Verizon, what they do, they just go in and they reconfigure your router, and they just basically change the upper limit on the bandwidth that's allowed. So, but it's a great device. It has gotten great reviews. So. Hang in there and try this, just rebooting the router to see whether that fixes your problems when you have a problem. We have an email from Lauren. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'd like to recommend that you showcase Christopher Sogian. There's an article about him in Wired, December 11 issue. He finds security flaws and privacy issues and makes us think about them. Hopefully you'll find him worth showcasing. On another note, I went to your Tech Talk website on Tuesday, December 27, to get the link that you sent in an email, but you've revised the whole website. I got this message when I clicked on email the show. It said, Foxfire doesn't know how to open this address because the protocol email to is not associated with any program. I'm using my work notebook to write to you and to visit your website. I contacted my firm's help desk, and they said they couldn't resolve it because it was your website. Best Lauren in Bethesda.
Huh.
Well, Chris Sogian is a good suggestion. I looked at him. He's actually a local guy.
Really?
So I'm gonna feature him in a future show. And he has actually created. He's kind of a privacy expert on the internet, and he has highlighted various privacy issues with companies, and he's gotten them to change their practices. I think he'd be a good guy to talk to. And there was an error on the website. We did release a new website recently.
It's funny. A tech show with an error on its website.
Yeah,
I find that humorous somehow.
So we actually set up a whole new CMS, content management system, at the back end, Sitecore, and we've got it hosted on the cloud. So we actually upgraded the underlying technology substantially, and then we did a lot of rewriting of the pages and added more graphics. And actually, when you click on the email Tech Talk, the button should have said mail to colon. With the address, and whoever actually put that in, they put email to colon, and that was incorrect. So we deleted the E and just have mail to, and now it works properly. So thank you for noticing that error. We had that fixed within 5 minutes after you sent in your email.
That's funny. I'll bet I know who it was that messed that up. You want to know who that was?
Who was that?
I bet it was this guy right here that messed it up, because he's...
There's a letter
I bet
in
he's,
your
yeah. He was the one that programmed it.
Certainly, mm-hmm. Yeah. He's trying to, because he's trying to keep, keep the workload down. He's trying to keep the workload down. He's like a union operator.
I didn't say that.
We got a letter from Robert Tyler. Dear Dr. Schertz, just thought you would like to know that I keep getting this warning message when I try to download the Tech Talk podcast from iTunes. The URL, http://mp3techtalk11119, cannot be found on the server. I'm not having problems with any other podcast that I listen to. On another topic, could Tech Talk do a profile of Mark Rusinovich in Profiles in IT? I recently read a book, and he wrote a book called Zero Day, and it was great. I understand he also works for Microsoft. I think he'd be a great subject. Thanks, Robert Taylor. Well, Robert, actually, we're going to feature Mark on today's show.
I was going to say.
That was a great suggestion.
You got enough ideas from our listeners to get to the rest of the month, practically.
That's right. It makes life so easy for me when I've got listeners who make suggestions. Mm-hmm. It was a great suggestion. We're going to feature Mark on today's show. Now, actually, that original podcast file for the November 19th show, in fact, did have an error. I had an extra I mistyped the link to the show because I write the podcast file myself. I have to say I made the error. I can't blame it on Mr. Big Mouth.
I think the doc is covering up because this guy is the one who screwed it
There's
up.
There's a letter in your mail.
He was doing a lot of work for us over the holidays.
I just can't stand crying and gnashing of teeth in the next room, so I'm not going to blame him for any more. So what happened was when somebody else actually sent me an email about this, and I went back and checked, and then I found the error in that link, and I changed it. Now, what you have to do, though, is reload the iTunes file in order to reload it so you get the new corrected link. Now, if you don't want to do that, you can always just put in... You can always get the show directly with the link, and all of the shows are actually at the same address. It's stratford.edu/mp3/techtalk with the date. In this case, it would be 11/19/11.mp3.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be stratford.edu/mp3/techtalk 11/19/11.mp3. So you can always get it directly, and you can always get the link from the show outline that we'll upload as soon as the show is over today. And thanks for listening. That was a great email, and we fixed that problem. So see, everybody's highlighting problems on
this. Did we break anything else this week?
I don't know.
I think we're done with that.
I think we're down with it. We're done with it. I couldn't put any more error messages on the show.
Make us look.
We have an email from Arnie. Hi, Dr. Schertz. I found several secure websites to store passwords and related passwords. LastPass.com, KeePass.com, RoboForm. My questions are, how secure are these sites themselves? Some are cloud sites. Which ones pass your screening or are any used by the Stratford staff? I have another question. If you buy an encrypted flash drive to store your passwords, does a computer... that you use to enter the passwords on the flash drive, keep the passwords somewhere in memory so that somebody else could access them. If so, this defeats the purpose. And finally, what is eToken and how does it work to protect sites? Does Stratford use eToken? Sorry, no physics questions this time. Hope these questions aren't too lengthy for the program. Merry Christmas and love Tech Talk, Arnie McKechnie.
Frequent listener and writer.
From Davidsonville, Maryland. Well, so many questions. Let me give you a quick answer. First of all, I would not really store, by preference, my critical passwords on the cloud. I'd like to keep them close at hand,
mm-hmm.
where I know absolutely who's on the site. Now, there is a password encryption program that you can load on your computer called KeePass, KeePass. It's open sourced, so people believe that it's quite secure because a lot of people look at the open source code, and it's free. And you can use that as a vault to store your passwords, and it's right on your computer. There's another program called RoboForm, which actually you had listed. Here's the third one you listed, RoboForm. That's actually not on the cloud. It's actually a program you load on your machine. That's $29, and that actually has also gotten great reviews. But I'm going for KeePass. It got great, great reviews, and it's free. Now, if you're a Mac user, you can try OnePass. OnePass was really highly rated by the Mac users. That's also a program that you can put on your computer. And that's $39 for a desktop version, or if you want a mobile phone version, it's $15. Now, as for cloud storage, this LastPass.com, which was the first item that you listed, LastPass.com, had got great reviews. It's only $1 a month. You can store your passwords on the cloud, but that's just not my preference. I'm not comfortable with that, although... I didn't see anybody that criticized LastPass.com security or any security breaches. I just would rather not have my passwords out on the cloud. As for an encrypted thumb drive, now this gives you even more security because you can actually put them on an encrypted thumb drive. Then, you know, if your thumb drive's not even plugged into your computer, there's no way anybody could get to them. So if you're really paranoid, that's not a bad idea. You can get a good encrypted thumb drive for around $60. The nice thing with an encrypted thumb drive, if you lose it, nobody can really even get at it because it's encrypted. The data is encrypted. And so usually people use encrypted thumb drives when they carry very classified data or highly sensitive data around with them so that if they would lose the thumb drive, somebody couldn't have access to it unless they had the password. Now, as far as eTokens are basically it's a thumb drive device that plugs into the USB port on your computer. It's actually a device that plugs into the USB port. It's designed to hold a public key infrastructure, a PKI security certificate, which is an electronic certificate that uniquely identifies an individual rather than a computer. And it's and so a rough analogy would be like e-token is part of the electronic identification card that is completed or enabled when you enter your password. E-token's about the size of a house key, can be kept on your key ring. So it's a very good way to authenticate users that log in remotely to verify that they are who they are. And when they pull the e-token out of the USB port, that computer is completely disabled. It can't do anything. It can't make any of the connections. It's just not allowed. So that's actually a good – we don't actually use much remote access, so we're not using e-tokens. But it's a very robust and highly used system for companies that have a lot of remote logins and they want people to operate. We have an email from Santa's girlfriend. Now, I actually didn't know that Santa had a girlfriend.
I think Mrs. Santa would like to know that.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what I should say about that.
Probably nothing.
Merry Christmas to Dr. Richard Church and all those who make Tech Talk come together and educate and inform the listeners. Wow. Santa's girlfriend really likes us,
yes,
Jim.
Yes, she does.
I have a job that my place of work that allows me to work out of my home. Now, we don't really have enough room to be located at a brick and mortar location, and so they've given me a laptop to work remotely from home in my home office. But the problem is, my laptop, after about 15 minutes, goes to the Control Alt Delete screen. In other words, it logs out. And you've got to hit Control Alt Delete to have to be able to put in the username and password. After 15 minutes, he says, "You know, I'm fed up with this. I'm sitting at home. I'm the only one there. I go to get a cup of coffee. I come back. I got to log back in again. I want to disable this thing." Now, I called the firm's help desk, and they said this is a firm policy and it can't be changed.
Wow.
I do like my job, the company, but this policy is a waste of my time. Are you aware of any workaround? Or I realize I'm really daydreaming. Of course, it's not worth losing my job over this, but am I just stuck with this? Happy New Year, Santa's girlfriend.
Mm.
You know, she's just a little bit frustrated, wouldn't
yes,
you say?
Yes, she is. I would say she is.
I don't think Santa's around enough. He only shows up once
okay.
a year.
I'm not even going there.
Your system administrator has implemented a very good security practice. You see, they don't really know where you're going to use your computer. Your computer could be used in a public area.
Starbucks, and you could leave it
Starbucks,
sitting on the table.
And somebody could steal it.
Right.
And so what happens is that you've really got to be able to make it so that the system logs out. And so I think you should just be thankful that they gave you 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because people could do an awful lot of stuff in 15 minutes.
Sure.
I mean, they could have given you only 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you can override that. I don't think you should override that. And I think they certainly have a valid policy there. And I've heard some logout times actually less than 15 minutes. So I think you should be happy with that. We have an email from Margaret. "Dear Dr. Schertz, I continue to have applications with this application." She's actually talking about Windows Live Mail. "On an earlier Tech Talk show, you mentioned a website or resource that's the best place to learn all the features of Windows Live Mail. I went back and read it a couple of months of postings of answers that you gave on the air, but I couldn't find that answer. How do I do a word search for a topic on any of your prior shows? Please repeat the source that lets you learn all about managing my Windows Live Mail 2009 version running on Windows XP. My biggest problem is deleting old emails, which is a way I could set it up to automatically delete any emails that are over 4 months old in any of my 9 inboxes."
Oh, my gosh.
She has 9 emails that she sort of consolidates with the Windows Live Mail. A big Tech Talk Dr. Schertz admirer, Margaret. Thanks.
Wow, lots of fans
today. Yeah, lots of fans today. Well, actually, let's talk about this search thing for Tech Talk first. An internal search for Tech Talk content does not work now with the new website. I'm going to add that to the new function.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
This is the third website deficiency. I'm going to add that
Heads
to
world.
The I'm going to add that to the website so that you can actually search all of the content for the old shows. That would be very useful.
I find it very useful.
Now, it turns out that you can use Google search tools just to search Stratford.edu. So you could, for instance, put this in the Google search engine, Windows Live Mail, and then space, type site, colon, stratford.edu, and it will search for Windows Live Mail only on stratford.edu. Now, here's the problem. We just went from the old website, and so that shows all of the Windows Live Mail listings on the old addresses of the old website. So every one of the links that that comes up with now is wrong. So, but in the future, if you want to search just a website, let me get you just put in the keyword you want to search and follow up with site colon and then the name and then the domain name of the site, and it will just search that site. It's a very good idea. Now, let me give you the answer so that you don't have to do all that searching since it's so difficult for you to search. Go to WindowsLiveHelp.com. WindowsLiveHelp.com. It's got everything you'd want to know about Windows Live Help. Now, as to having a function that automatically deletes emails after 4 months, I don't think you can do that. I think you're going to have to do that manually. Yeah. There's really no automatic way to do that, so you're just going to have to manage all. But you can put them all in one big inbox, and you can delete them all together. So there you go, and thank you for that email, Margaret.
This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. We'll be back with more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio, and now it's time for
Profiles in IT.
So glad he got shoveled
out. And today we're going to be talking about Stephen McConnell Case. Stephen McConnell Case is best known as co-founder and former CEO and chairman of America Online.
I thought I've heard of him.
Yeah, people just call him Steve Case.
Steve Case,
normally.
You know, the McConnell part. You
they don't
normally
call him Stephen McConnell Case.
This is kind of like a crime show. You identify everybody with three names.
Stephen McConnell
John Wayne
Case.
Gacy.
Yeah, they call him. Steve Case was born August 21st, 1958 in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Ah.
It's quite the nice location there.
Yes, it is.
We're Hawaii 5-0. Now, Case graduated from Punahou School in 1976. Maybe it could be Punahou School.
Possibly.
In 1976. And then he went on to Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts, and graduated there in 1980. So he got his bachelor with a degree in political science.
Ooh.
He got that degree in 4 years. Now, then he went on. He didn't go to graduate school. He just wanted to start making bucks right away.
Uh-huh.
So he worked 2 years as an assistant brand manager for Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati, Ohio. In 1982, he joined Pizza Hut in Wichita, Kansas.
Wow.
And he served as manager for New Pizza Marketing.
Who'd have thunk there were all these new pizzas out there, right?
You never though. Okay.
Exactly.
Now he only worked. He only worked at Pizza Hut for about a year. I guess he decided.
Maybe that's why.
That wasn't for him. So in January 1983, he was hired as a marketing consultant for the Control Video Corporation. Now the company was marketing a service called GameLine for Atari 2600 video game console, and it allowed you to download games via something really new. You dial up with the modem and you download the game.
Oh wow!
It's really hot
high
technology.
Tech
back then. Yeah. Well, back then, 1983, that was hot technology.
Yeah.
Hardly anybody even knew what a modem was back then.
It'd take all week to download the program.
Okay, now he was hired as a marketing consultant in 1983. The next year, the company went nearly bankrupt.
They were ahead of their time. That was
they
a problem,
were,
right?
They were going down the tank right away. Now, Frank Caulfield was one of the investors, and he said, I can't lose all my money here. I got to bring this thing back to life.
Mm-hmm.
So he brought in Jim Kimsey as a manufacturing consultant. And then he hired Case full-time as a marketing employee. So he thought, okay, I got some guy handling manufacturing, some guy marketing employee. Now, they were limping along here with this game line in the Video Control Corporation, but it never really went anywhere. So in 1985, Case helped found the Quantum Computer Services, which was an online service company. And it was built out of the remnants of the Control Video Company.
How about that?
So he just sort of drove that into the ground, and then he hopped over here to Quantum Computer Services. Now, Jim Kimsey was the CEO of Quantum Computer Services, and Kimsey then promoted Case to vice president of marketing of the Quantum Computer Services. In 1987, Kimsey went Case once again to executive vice president of Quantum Computer Services. Kimsey was grooming Case to take over when he retired. So I guess he was planning to retire. I mean, he wasn't really in that long, but I guess he wanted to retire. And the transition formally took place in 1991 when Case became CEO of the Quantum Computer Services, and in 1995 he became chairman of Quantum Computer Services. Now, as part of Quantum, it turns out that Quantum also was developing a number of other products too. Now, as part of the changes that gave birth to Quantum, Case changed the company's strategy. He said, you know, this Atari game download is probably not going to make a whole company for us.
Mm-hmm.
So then they started Quantum Link, Q-Link for short, and you could download applications to the Commodore 6400. Now, he started the Q-Link in 1985. He did that with a programmer that he later co-founded AOL with, Mark Sharif. In 88, Quantum began offering Apple Link that allowed Apple computers to download applications, and then it offered PC Link that allowed IBM-compatible computers to download applications. And then he got the idea. He says, wait a minute here. Why don't I bring all these links together under one umbrella? So he changed the name of the company to America Online.
Never heard of it.
and he brought all the Apple and the PC and the Commodore downlinks together. And he then created a new idea. People could then use dial-up, which he became a specialist in dial-up, use dial-up to basically chat online. So he set up basically a global chat service with America Online. And by 1994, it reached 1 million subscribers. And if you remember back in the beginning, AOL was not really hooked into the Internet. People would just log on, and there would be chat groups.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd pay so much a minute to chat. And they made a huge amount of money because it became like an online dating service. And people just find somebody they'd want to chat with, and they would just burn up the hours chatting online, paying by the minute. And they were making a killing. They were up to 1 million customers in 1994. Now, after a decade of quick growth, AOL merged with Time Warner. See, the problem is, later on, AOL hooked up to the Internet. And then people could dial into AOL and get on the Internet. But then pretty soon people said, wait a minute here. Why don't I just get broadband and go straight to the Internet without AOL? So AOL was having trouble holding on to their customers, and they were trying to meet the threat of broadband. That was a huge threat to the dial-up service of AOL. So in order to meet that threat, Case got the idea. He said, look, if I team up with Time Warner, maybe we could do something really good because we've got the internet locked up. Time Warner's got the content. Maybe together we could create something and capitalize on broadband. And we could create a, we could create content online that people would come to us using broadband, and we could do a big transition. So they merged in January of 2000, and it was a $164 billion merger. But it quickly ran into trouble as the dot-com recession occurred.
Yep.
And then what happened was, as soon as they merged, when AOL was at this peak price and they got this sweetheart deal with Time Warner, the AOL prices just crashed. Mm. And there were all sorts of, you know, all sorts of accusations of accounting scandals. Maybe AOL was artificially priced up higher, this and that. And ultimately, you know, Case stayed on with Warner and AOL for a while, but he resigned as chairman of AOL in January of 2003. After the sale, and then he remained on the company's board of directors for another three more years, and he just rode the stock prices down.
Oh my!
Now I was watching. It's been 10 years since the merger.
Mm-hmm.
It was 2000. That's 2010. Steve Case was on Squawk Box. This is MSNBC,
right.
And so he was interviewed on Squawk Box. He's still defending the merger. He's saying it was the correct vision. He said AOL had the internet market, but they didn't have the content. Time Warner had the content, but didn't have the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And Time Warner also had broadband because they had all these cable companies. So he said it made sense to bring AOL's internet expertise combined with Time Warner's broadband and content expertise. And so he said the vision was correct, but he said the implementation was poorly executed. They never really brought together the two companies. And the reason for that was there were different cultures.
Yeah. Yeah.
One was the traditional media culture, and the other was the go-go high-tech culture.
Right.
And they tried to bring these people together. They couldn't communicate.
Yeah.
So it ended up that AOL ended up just being a subsidiary of Time Warner. And they never really integrated them to get the power and the synergy of the two approaches. So he said, a good vision poorly executed really doesn't lead to anything, and it didn't lead to anything.
Now, have time for a short sidebar. Oh, no, you're not quite finished yet.
I've got a short
sidebar. Jim Kimsey, did you know he was a local guy?
No, I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
he is. He was born here, grew up in South Arlington, went to Gonzaga and St. John's.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a... That is an interesting thing. So it's all a local. See, AOL's
AOL really, is out of Dulles.
AOL's kind of a local company.
Yeah.
Now he has now formed a company called Revolution Limited Liability Corporation, Revolution.com. He formed that in April 2005 when he got off the board of directors of Time Warner. And Revolution is actually a holding company in multiple consumer product markets like health, financial services, resorts, living, and digital media, all aimed at the consumer. And he's trying to make the world of the consumer easier with the various products that they're offering. And so they're basically starting companies or funding small companies as kind of a venture capital firm, and then they're holding them. Now, he's also chairman of the Case Foundation, which he and his wife created in 1997. Also, if you want to follow Stephen McConnell Case, he has a Facebook account and a Twitter account.
How about that?
And he's quite active on Twitter. So you just do Steve Case Twitter, Steve Case Facebook.
You put the McConnell part in there. You don't need that part.
You don't really need the McConnell part. Nobody knows of that. That's like a name. So Steve actually was a visionary,
mm-hmm.
but he sort of got the in, he. I remember when AOL first went on the internet because you had all these technical people. Like, I was sort of a nerdy kind of guy. I downloaded my own protocol stack, and I was on the internet, and I was playing around on the internet. And you had all these unwashed masses on AOL, so to speak. And all of the, all of the arrogant nerdy guys were, like, always making fun of AOL people. And then when AOL opened up their portal from AOL to the internet, all the unwashed masses were let in. And you should have seen all of the complaints, because all the discussion boards, people would show up, they wouldn't know anything. Mm-hmm. They start asking questions. And there was
quite
a bit of dissension between the AOL community and the non-AOL community at the time. Now, that's all gone away now, and mm-hmm. everybody's just one big happy family. But I remember the weekend when AOL unleashed their unwashed masses on the internet, and it just created a huge traffic jam.
Much to your horror and chagrin, I'm
yes,
sure.
Yes, indeed.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on one of these fine radio stations, WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, and WTOP FM HD2 Washington. When we return, it'll be your chance to play the pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Schertz. It's this guy right here.
And I would be that guy, and my name is Jim Russ. Don't forget it. We just talked about Steve Case, and he graduated from college, from Williams College in 1980, with a degree in poli-sci. He had 2 jobs right after that, and you guys have been kind of slow lately in these pop quizzes, so I've been meaning to talk to you about that. But so today there's 2 answers to this. If you can name one of the 2 places where Steve Case worked immediately after graduating from college, tell me now. By calling 877-936-9333. If you got the right answer, you get tickets for 2 to the Escoffier at Stratford University, fine dining on the campus of Falls Church, or to the dining room at the campus in Woodbridge. Again, the number 877-936-9333, 877-936-9333. This is Tech Talk Radio. And now, because it's starting to feel like winter, like it should, once again, I figured I'd bring back some bad memories for everybody, so we take you back now to the winter of 2010.
Let's talk about weather predictions.
Yes.
This thing, of course, I was really studying the weather predictions last week because I wanted to know, can I come into the studio or not? And we also have to predict whether we cancel classes or not.
Exactly.
So I started with, I kind of got interested into this weather prediction. My neighbor is actually a weatherman from the Navy. He was a commander and doing weather forecasting for the Navy. So he uses the Navy weather system. He likes snow gaps.
Mm-hmm.
The North America, let's see, this is, the Navy Operational Global Atmospheric Prediction System, no gaps, and you can just Google it, NOGAPS, and it's a very nice 7-day forecast. You can get it for any part of the world.
Yeah.
It comes up in North America by default, but you can get any other part of the world by it. It's quite a nice system. But
it's
interested in general about this weather prediction because there are multiple models out there, and what they do is that they get the results of all these models, and they kind of combine them to try to get the best composite view of what's going to come out in the future. And I went back and looked at numerical weather prediction. It turned out that the first efforts were done in the 1920s, but they really weren't very successful until we had good computer power.
Right.
Now, there are a number of forecast models, both global and regional scale, that we run to help forecast worldwide weather. Now, they'll use ensemble forecasts, where they'll combine a lot of different models to help get rid of forecast uncertainty and extend the weather forecasting further and further into the future. Now, all of these view the atmosphere as a fluid. They all view, air as like a fluid. It's mm-hmm. And the idea of numerical weather prediction is to simply sample the state of the fluid at any given time, use the equations of fluid dynamics and thermodynamics, both near and dear to the heart of a physicist.
Yes, of course.
To estimate the state of the fluid at some time in the future. Now, British mathematician Lewis Fry Richardson first proposed numerical weather prediction in 1922. Richardson attempted to perform a numerical forecast, but was not successful. Now, the first successful numerical prediction was performed in 1950 by a team composed of American meteorologists Jale Carney, Philip Thompson, and Larry Gates, and Norwegian meteorologist Ragnar the Jortoff.
Nicely done.
Now, they actually were working with an applied mathematician who we've heard before, John von Neumann.
Yes, we have.
Who used the ENIAC digital computer. This was the first supercomputer out there. And von Neumann was, of course, involved at the basic original computer architecture, the von Neumann architecture for these computers. And so this was a major application for the computer. Now, they use a simplified form of atmospheric dynamics based on barotropic vorticity equations.
Ooh.
Are you familiar with those?
It would have to do with
barotropic must be pressure.
And
it must be how barometric pressure pushes the fluid around, because mm-hmm. that would be. Now, this simplification greatly reduced the demands on computer time because they weren't using thermodynamics. They were just using pressure. To see how it pressure and vorticity, probably vorticity as it relates to Coriolis forces here at the spinning. Now, this simplification greatly reduced the demands on computer time and memory, so the computation could be performed in with the relatively primitive computers available at the time. Later, we have more models with more complete equations, and we got supercomputers. Operational numerical weather predictions used for routine practical use began in 1955 under a joint program of the U.S. Air Force, the Navy, and the Weather Bureau. So numerical weather prediction has been around since the first ENIAC computer in John von Neumann's time. Now, the one that I like is no gaps because my neighbors recommended this to me. Which one do you like, Jim?
I like this. This is I haven't used too many of them, but this is really, if you have any sort of knowledge about weather, this is really quite something else. Are you looking at this?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
The little system that's spinning south of us today, when that gets mm-hmm. out over the open waters of the Atlantic, that's going to Good thing that's not going to be over land. That's going to be quite a storm.
That's a huge storm. You can see that. You go to NOGAPS, it gives a seven-day prediction, and it steps it up in six-hour increments. So you can watch the precipitation and the temperature shift over the next 7 days. It's quite a nice – and you can do that over any part of the world. We're looking at North America now. So that's pretty much all you wanted to know about numerical weather prediction.
Yes,
now,
it is.
There are also some efforts to try to use technology for snow removal.
This is a good idea.
See, now up in Saginaw County, Michigan, now they get a lot of snow. What they've decided to do, they have GPS monitors on all of their snow removal trucks. All the snow removal trucks then report to a website, and just the citizens can log on to the website, and they can see where snow removal is currently being done.
That's pretty cool.
And so they can track, and they can decide where they want to drive, because they know where it's been plowed.
Well, this would save a lot of trouble, because it would save people from calling the highway department and say, when am I going to see a plow? Where are the plows? You can see where they are.
And here's the other thing, too. All the plows you see are hooked to GPS.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are a couple of drivers sitting out there not plowing, and
you can figure that out.
Just kind of just talking, shooting the bull, having a long lunch, all the citizens are going to know that.
Right. And then, and more importantly, the supervisor can drive
up. The supervisor is going to know that.
Hey, guys, time to plow.
Now, now Chicago's also using, and you see it's the northern states that are doing this because they get more snow. So Chicago's also using technology to help control their budget. Now, what they do, in addition to GPS systems on the trucks to know where they are, they have sensors on the trucks. And the sensors tell how much salt is being distributed. They tell, is the blade up or down? So they track the truck performance. And so what they're trying to do is, because they've noticed sometimes they put too much salt in one place and not enough in another place, so they're trying to optimize their distribution of salt and actually stay within budget. They're also trying to use some simple operation analysis to try to maximize the effectiveness of the equipment that they have using technology. So Chicago and Saginaw, Michigan are doing this. I don't think we had any GPS sensors on our trucks here in Virginia.
Well, not we based just, in your neighborhood.
We were just pretty glad that they were even around anywhere to be seen.
This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. Be right back with more tech news after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio.
You know, one of the worst things that can happen to anybody, I think, would be losing their iPhone.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly David Byrd.
David Byrd. You know,
because he would be apoplectic.
See, the thing is, because there's something about iPhone users, they all love their iPhone.
More than most humans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a certain bond between the user and the iPhone that's hard to break.
It almost seems unhealthy.
Yeah,
I think.
I mean, people are just, you know, if you try to come between the iPhone and the owner of the iPhone, you'd better watch out.
Yeah, exactly.
So when there's a lost iPhone, there are definitely tears.
Moaning, wailing, gnashing of teeth.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Now, and then the thing is on the lost iPhones, you'd think, because there is actually a hardware number on the iPhone, called them an IMEI number. And this particular number could be used to track the iPhone. Like, for instance, if you have a lost iPhone, you could take out the SIM card. You could go into, say, AT&T, which is a provider of IT, and you could say, I'd like an iPhone account, and I already have my own iPhone. AT&T will not check that number and determine that it's a stolen iPhone. Even though you tell them your iPhone's been stolen, AT&T says, you know, we just don't do that. We're not going to check for that stolen. Now, of course, from AT&T's perspective, somebody takes an iPhone, they get an iPhone account, AT&T makes more money.
Mm-hmm.
The person that lost it buys a new iPhone, AT&T makes more money. So they thought, why should we locate the lost iPhone? Then if you go to Apple, of course, if somebody has an iPhone and they set up an iTunes account to download songs or download applications, they also know the hardware number of that iPhone. And so, but Apple says it's not our job to locate a stolen iPhone. So even though they have all the credit card information, they got the address information, they know it's a stolen iPhone, they say, we just don't track that.
Mm-hmm.
So because they have another customer.
That's right. They get to sell another iPhone.
Yeah.
It's not brain surgery.
And
it's
so,
not rocket science.
And so it is quite – and then the third thing that's a kind of the grand conspiracy against the iPhone owner is you cannot buy insurance for it.
What's with that?
You can buy insurance for anybody else, but the insurance, they say, look, we used to offer insurance, but everybody claims they've lost the iPhone. We replaced so many iPhones, they just canceled insurance. So you cannot buy insurance
for
it.
You know why I don't want an iPhone? Because everybody else does. That's
right.
Why.
So now, there are options that you can have to protect yourself in the event your iPhone is stolen or lost.
Uh-huh.
Because, you see, the iPhone has built into it a GPS system.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Wi-Fi. And so you can actually have applications that could locate where the iPhone is in phone home.
Ah.
And there are a number of applications like that. In fact, you could remotely control your iPhone to one application lets you to remotely control it through the GPS connection. And even if they change the SIM card, you can send a text message back to yourself and it will tell you the new phone number.
Ah, so while Apple won't actually help you find it, they give you the wherewithal for you to go find
okay.
it yourself.
First of all, Apple does have a way to track stolen phones.
Okay.
It's a service it's a service that they offer called Mobile Me.
How much does that cost?
Okay, now listen, if you have Mobile Me, they will use Mobile Me to track the location of your stolen iPhone.
Uh-huh.
Using the iPhone's GPS. Now, Mobile Me costs $99 a year. And they said,
shoot me now.
And so they said, you know, if you wanted us to track, you know, and that's what AT&T, you know, the person that lost their phone, AT&T said, well, if you want it, we could track you. If you'd have signed up for a tracking service in advance, then we'd track it for you. Now, AT&T.
Oh, but no.
AT&T has another tracking service. If you have multiple iPhones, you can keep one iPhone can track another iPhone and you know where they're located at all times. Now that costs $10.95 a month.
And if
you have three iPhones, it's $14.95 a month, and then you could track it. And they said, now if you had signed up for the tracking package, then we'd tell you where the iPhone was located. So you see, there's like this grand conspiracy
that
is getting to be a little bit
frustrating. The more I know,
frustrating.
The less I like.
Now, here's the thing. There is a program called iLocalis,
mm-hmm.
I-L-O-C-A-L-I-S, iLocalis. Now, it's a program that's actually fantastic. It only costs $20 flat out, and it will actually allow you to remotely take over your iPhone, send a text message back, even if the SIM card has been changed. It allows you to wipe off the data. It allows you to go in there and have complete control of the phone, and you can actually locate where it's located, where it is, and it's posted right to a website, and it's $20 a year to locate iLocalis. Now, here's the thing. iLocalis operates in the background. Now, the way the iPhone operates, third-party applications cannot operate in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Only Apple applications could operate in the background.
Ah.
So that means that the only way that iLocalis would work, if you've got a regular iPhone operating the iPhone operating system, iLocalis would be the only application running. Well, what thief is going to bring up iLocalis on their own when they know they're not going to do
Probably
it?
Probably not.
So it turns out that Apple will not let iLocalis to be distributed on their application site, and that you can't even run it in the Apple operating system. So you have to basically unlock your phone. They call it you've got to unlock the phone in order to get it operated. They basically say they call it a jailbroken. You've got to jailbreak your phone.
Oh, crying out loud.
So there, and you can go on site. You can jailbreak your iPhone. Now Apple periodically tries to brick those iPhones, but if you jailbreak your iPhone, you can go to a website, Cydia, Cydia, which is an app store for jailbroken iPhones. You can download iLocalis.
Uh-huh.
iLocalis is the best way to track down what you've got.
Interesting.
Now, there's also another one called Mobile Spy. Now, this is actually a free application. It actually reports back the GPS applications. It has SMS messages. You don't have to jailbreak your phone for this thing to run. Now, and it will report back in real time and send back any text messages your phone sends, and it will track the GPS location in real time. It only costs $99 a year. I mean, it's not much better than Mobile Me. Now, there's another application called iHound. Now, iHound can be downloaded from the App Store, and it's only $2.99.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is iHound only works when your device is basically hooked up to a computer.
Well, that really doesn't do you any good.
No, and so when you hook up your iPhone to the computer, iHound will then connect back to through the internet and tell you where the phone is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is available from the App Store for only $2.99, and actually people do. If they want to just get an iTunes account and put music on it, is a good chance that they would actually hook that up to the computer, and then you could tell who had it and where they were located. Now, there is also one other application, Navizon app.
Yeah.
Navizon, Navizon app. A Navizon app will allow you to locate your iPhone. It uses either GPS, it uses Wi-Fi, or it uses cellular triangulation to locate where your particular unit is operating. And if you want to locate this, you can actually send an SMS, a text message to your iPhone, and it will report back the location of it. So Navizon application got pretty good reviews. I couldn't get the price on Navizon application. So there, I think the net result is you've got to do something before you lose the iPhone.
Yes.
And not after.
Not afterwards.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
That's all we have time for here this week on Tech Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. If you have a technology question you'd like to ask Dr. Schertz, he'd like to get it, and he'd like to answer it here on the radio. Go to techtalkonline.com. That's our website. There you can email your question to the doc. You can also learn all about this show. You can see outlines for all of our previous broadcasts, and you can actually go in there and listen to them too. You can sign up for us on Apple iTunes as well to listen to those shows. Learn more about Stratford University by going to our website, stratford.edu. Learn all about each of the campuses and all the programs that are offered there. Again, thank you for listening to Tech Talk Radio. We will see you again next week here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.